Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 111. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, CJ Chris Johnston.
Hello, hello, Hoff. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure. Glad you could join me this week. It is a good time to be a Nintendo fan right now, because basically we are in a situation where we've got an embarrassment of riches, just a ton of new releases. You can tell that the holidays are not too far off because there's just been a ton of new releases recently. There's been a lot of stuff at retail. There's been a lot of stuff in the eShop. Of course, we just had the Super NES Classic released not too long ago. So we're all going to be able to cover a little bit of that this week. Some of these new titles we'll have to save for next episode. But wow, we've got some really good stuff to talk about this week. So we'll be talking about some of these games, we've got a little news to discuss, and then we'll have this week's big topic, which is video game ninjas.
Dun dun dun.
However, before we get to that, let's kick things off with some new game impressions, starting with Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga plus Bowser's Minions for the Nintendo 3DS. Or the Nintendo 3DS family of systems, as Nintendo likes to say. So this is a remake of arguably the best Mario and Luigi game. Certainly one of my favorites on the Game Boy Advance. And this is the game where Mario and Luigi team up and explore the Bean Bean Kingdom to save Princess Peach's voice from the evil Cacoletta and the evil-er Fawful. This expands on the timing-based gameplay from other Mario RPGs and allows the bros to go on a wild and kooky and exciting adventure.
I love it. That's the best kind of adventure, really, wild and kooky.
Yeah, isn't it?
That's the way I like it.
Mm-hmm. It's still got the great writing that we remember from all these years ago. It's still got a ton of great characters, but it's also been enhanced in a lot of ways. So have you been playing this one? Did you pick it up as well?
I have not, and here's an embarrassing admission. Oh? I didn't really play this on the Game Boy Advance.
Oh my goodness.
I heard so many great things about it, but during that time I worked at a video game magazine, and I wasn't on the review for this game, at least I'm pretty sure not. And there was just too many other things at the time, and I just didn't get around to it. It's on my backlog. I think own a copy of it, but I have never played it.
Wow. Well, that's kind of understandable. I mean, that sort of thing can happen when you're busy playing other games that you're required to play through. And to be honest, I have never completed the game either. I played a lot of it, but I don't really remember how far I got. I think it was, pretty far in. But I've been playing this one, and really, I don't remember anything of the original. Hardly anything beyond the first hour seems familiar to me. So it's pretty much a brand new experience.
Nice. Did they make any adjustments in any of the jokes or the writing? I know it appears that they did a lot on the graphics anyway.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, they haven't changed the writing. All the things I remember from the old game, like, the famous Mustard of Doom line, that stuff is all still there. But yes, they did change the graphics quite a bit. And, maybe you didn't play the old game, but you've probably at least seen enough screenshots and things to be able to compare the two. Do you have any thoughts about these changes to the visuals?
I think it looks really, really good. And I kind of wish they would bring some other Game Boy Advance games to new systems with the same kind of artistic touch, because I think these graphics look really great.
I actually wasn't sure what to think of the graphics, because I like the way that the previous game looked. And sometimes with these Mario Luigi games, the graphics are so detailed, they almost have sort of a pre-rendered look that seems kind of odd to me. But after playing this one for several hours, I'm actually really happy with the visuals, and I like what they've done to the place. I mean, you look at the old game, and everything is really, really flat and simple, and there's hardly any shading. And that's okay. That looked great at the time. But when you compare the two, it's kind of like night and day. There's just so much more detail in this one. It is crazy. It's just amazing how much stuff they added. And I ended up really, really liking it. So
yeah,
I wasn't sold at first, but now I'm like, yeah, I'm really glad they went through and totally enhanced the visuals.
That's how a good remake should be, really, where they pump everything up and it doesn't just look like the original game with a few fixes and they redo everything. I like that approach for sure.
Yeah, they did a lot and they did a pretty good job at it. The one thing I will say about the graphics, though, that I don't like is that there is no 3D. The game plays in 2D only.
fine by me. I recently picked up a 2DS XL, and I hardly ever really used the 3D on the 3DS, just on a few games, so...
That's a shame. It's a shame. There's so much good 3D stuff out there. Eh. And, you know, for people like you, there's a switch where you can turn it off. But if they're going to go through and they're going to redo the graphics for the entire game for the 3DS, I figure they might as well add 3D graphics. Mm. And, you know, I can see them saying, well, it's a top-down game. It doesn't really maybe work that well. But they did it with great effect in The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds. And I'm sure if they could do it in that, they could do it in this. So for me, I think it's kind of a bummer.
They don't even have, like, any... It's not like Pokemon where they have, like, any sort of 3D mode or anything like
nope,
that?
Nope, not at all. There's, like, one part in the game where you can look at the world map through a telescope. I thought, well, maybe at least that they could put in stereoscopic 3D. That would work pretty well. But nope, not even there. So, nope, no 3D at all. Nintendo is all in on the 2DS, apparently. Kind of a shame, in my opinion, but it's also not the end of the world.
True.
Another thing that I kind of would have liked in this game is that if they had taken advantage of the extra buttons that are on the 3DS to make it easier to do some of Mario and Luigi's special moves. You know, the GBA only really had four buttons, had L and R and A and B, and you had to use those buttons to scroll through all sorts of moves, their regular jumping, their special jumps, their hammer attacks, and it was a little bit clunky, but, you know, you've only got a few buttons. I could deal with it on the GBA. But I was hoping that, you know, with this one, you've got those extra ZL and ZR buttons, and then you have both the circle pad and the control pad, and they're both used for character movement, so it's very redundant. So I was thinking, if only they could use one of those to maybe, you know, quickly assign moves, but no. You're still just scrolling through all these moves with L and R, and it's, you know, kind of inconvenient and something that they probably should have fixed.
That's kind of a shame. Although, you know, with the new 3DS, they added that those extra L and R buttons on the top.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
That they never use any of those in any game. Like, I still have yet to find a game that uses those for anything.
There's something that used them. I know there was, but I can't even tell you what off the top of my head. Mm. That's how silly it is. But yeah, I thought this would have been a good opportunity to use those to take advantage of those extra buttons there, especially since they're pushing the new 2DS right now. You know, if you picked one of those up, here's a, you know, a good example of how to use its extra features. But nope, just got to hit the L or R button several times to scroll through all these moves. Now, you can quickly select them from the touchscreen, but that's at the expense of having a map. And at least you can make both characters jump simultaneously with X, but they could have done much more. Again, not the end of the world, but it would have been nice. The game also has a new easy mode, and I have not tried that out yet, but I guess that is, you know, kind of nice for people who haven't been able to get into the series, because it does require a lot of precise timing for, you know, executing your attacks as well as avoiding attacks. For me, it's been really fun. The difficulty has been pretty much spot on, but if that's not really your thing, I could see why an easy mode might be helpful.
I really like that Nintendo adds that type of thing to games.
Mm-hmm. Sort of makes it more accessible.
Mario Odyssey has a thing that you can turn on that gives you like an arrow on the screen. So for younger players, I think that's really important.
I didn't realize that.
In that game, yeah. The new trailer that just came out had that in there. I watched that and I was like, oh, you know, maybe my five-year-old daughter then could enjoy Mario Odyssey without me having to sort of backseat game on her.
I actually have not watched that trailer yet because I'm intentionally trying to not spoil myself any further before the game comes out, but I don't really know how much longer I can wait without diving in because I'm so excited about that release.
Yeah, I had the same thought as you. I thought maybe I shouldn't watch this, but I couldn't help myself and I did. And it covers some old ground, but then shows off some new stuff too. And I actually stopped it halfway through after watching the little guided area. I was like, all right, I'm done.
Well, for now, as far as Mario is concerned, I will still be keeping busy with Superstar Saga. And then the other part of that package is Minion Quest, which is this sort of odd, unlockable action strategy hybrid that you get a couple hours into the game. And you don't really get to control what's going on directly. You manage your units, you get to control your captain and execute his special moves. You can activate a handful of special abilities. And so far, it's interesting and different, but I kind of feel like I still don't have enough influence on what's going on in this mode.
Hmm.
Like, if you could actually command certain types of units to attack other types of units or something like that, then I'd feel a little bit better about it. But right now, it just feels like it's, you know, half a game, which, appropriately enough, it actually is. It is just literally half a game.
It is the plus Bowser's Minions part, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, I've only played the first chapter of this mode so far, so maybe it'll get better as I, you know, play more of it and unlock more units. And by first chapter, I mean it's been like, you know, 7 or 8 stages or something like that.
Hmm.
But yeah, I'd certainly like to play more before I make any conclusion about whether it's a worthy addition or not.
Gotcha.
Of course, speaking of Bowser's Minions, alongside this game was the release of 2 new amiibo.
Amiibo!
The Goomba and the Koopa Troopa. Don't suppose you picked up either of these?
I did not, but now that you mention it, I might have to go out and do that. I love amiibo, even though, you know, I may not play a lot of the games. I didn't really play a whole lot of Smash Brothers, but I have a whole lot of Smash Brothers amiibo, just because they're really cool toys.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I buy them all, whether I'm going to be really into the game or not, pretty much. And, you know, these two new additions, you know, they're not anything really special, but they are solid representations of the characters, and it's definitely nice to have amiibo versions of 2 of Mario's most iconic enemies. It seems that they are used to unlock badges in Superstar Saga, which can give you some pretty cool stat boosts, but I have no idea what they do in Minions Quest. I've registered my amiibo for use in that mode, but I have not been able to figure out what it does so far.
Okay.
Anyway, as far as amiibo go, they are kind of plain, but I'm still very happy to have these new additions in my collection. So,
for sure.
Not really going to get any complaints from me. Overall, I'm really enjoying the game so far. And, you know, CJ, for someone like you who has not ever played this game, I think this is an excellent opportunity for you to finally give it a spin. For me as well, like I said, I never finished it, so this is finally going to be my chance. I am really, really digging it so far. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I think it might actually be the best game in the Mario and Luigi series. It's kind of the purest. You know, all the other ones, they kind of had to add some sort of gimmick. You know, you had to add Paper Mario, you had to add controlling Bowser, you had to add the Mario and Luigi babies. But this was sort of the concept in its purest form, and because of that, it just might be the best. So I certainly recommend this game to people from what I've played so far.
I might have to pick it up at some point.
Yeah, you probably should.
Yeah.
The other game that I've been playing and that was released by Nintendo last week is Layton's Mystery Journey, Catriel and the Millionaire's Conspiracy. I don't suppose you picked this one up.
I did not, but didn't this come out on mobile a few months ago?
It did. It did indeed. You are correct. It came out on mobile first, and now we have it available on Nintendo systems. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I am a fan of the Layton games.
Me too.
But since I bought a Switch, I have mainly been focused on games there and not so much on the 3DS outside of Metroid. But since I loved those Layton games so much, I'm very interested in hearing how this plays.
Well, so far it seems that it's very much following the general established formula of previous Layton titles. It's still basically a point-and-click adventure exploration game mixed with lots of puzzle solving. As you'd expect, there are a wide variety of puzzles. You're positioning shapes, there's logic puzzles, mazes, math puzzles, identification, etc. And I would say the puzzles do feel fresher and more varied than in the last few Professor Layton games. And I believe that's because there is a new puzzle designer working on this one compared to the past games. There are still a few, you know, trick question puzzles that will make you want to punch your 3DS in its face. And I was like, oh, come on. If you're going to say you could introduce that into the puzzle, then, you know, you could just apply similar logic to half the puzzles and be like, well, what if a dinosaur just came through and ate everyone? That would ruin your puzzle and change everything, wouldn't it? And they always have a few of those that are in there, I guess. But again, you know, not the end of the world. However, they really do change things up as far as the story and the characters go, because, as you're probably aware, you no longer play as Professor Layton as the main character. The main character is Catriel, a.k.a. Cat, who is Professor Layton's daughter. And, you know, say what you will about Professor Layton, but he was certainly a very distinctive and unique character. I mean, there's really, you know, nothing else like that I had experienced in a video game. And Cat, on the other hand, so far is coming across as really kind of generic and boring.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't nearly, for me, have the appeal that Professor Layton did.
And she doesn't have a buddy or anything along for the ride either, right? Or is it just
her? Oh, no,
her,
she does. She does. She does.
Okay.
She has an assistant named Ernest, and he's even more boring than she is.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He's just really plain and generic, and other than appearing to have a crush on Catriel, just really has no personality.
Oh.
However, they are also joined by a talking dog, who is by far the best character I've encountered in the game.
Nice.
And it does sound, you know, kind of weird, and they just kind of explain it away as, oh yeah, some people can understand what he's saying, and some people can't, but yeah, it's a talking dog who just likes to make sort of flippant and off-the-cuff remarks. And he is certainly the most interesting character.
Nice.
The game starts out with him saying, oh, we're going to try to figure out what this dog's story is and where he came from. But so far, we haven't looked into that yet. Hopefully, they will tell me before the game is over.
Sounds like a good side quest thing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They've also changed the structure of the game. It is episodic instead of just having one long story. But again, so far, this is not an improvement because it means the mysteries are just a lot simpler. And, you know, the end of each episode sort of rolls around fairly quickly after you collect enough clues. And so you then have this little assortment of clues and then you hit the solve button. But you don't actually do anything yourself to solve them. You don't go through any process. And, you know, most of the time the solution is really obvious, but sometimes it's not. And it would just be a lot more satisfying if you were actually going through some sort of motions to figure out the answer to the mystery instead of just having the gameplay have a literal solve button where it's like, aha, the culprit was you.
Right.
It feels like they could have done something more than that.
Yeah, like if you collect a certain number of clues, that's the number of tries you have at like a super puzzle or something like that.
Maybe, or like in some of the more recent Ace Attorney games, when you get to the end of a case, they sort of you know, have a bunch of multiple choice questions that pop up, and you know, you have to answer those, and that sort of, you know, puts all the pieces in place, and so you sort of feel like you're solving something on your own, even if you kind of really aren't. And something like that would have been nice. Just, you know, something in there to be like, okay, this is where all the pieces fit together instead of just having it explained to you directly. So I feel like that's another missed opportunity.
I would agree.
And then the game also just kind of feels more localized, maybe for lack of a better word. Like, it has a lot of, you know, pun names for the characters, really obvious pun names. Like, you have a director character who is named D-Rector.
Oh, what?
Yeah, not the most clever pun in the world, but they're kind of similar to some of the Ace Attorney pun names. But it's not something they've ever done in Layton before. Also, everybody, it seems, has some sort of weird accent. Even though you're in London, like there's some people with a French accent or an Italian accent or a Spanish accent or, you know, a Southern U.S. accent. And I'm wondering, is it like that in the original game? But again, it just feels like it takes away the distinct, you know, British personality that most of the other Layton games have had, and just kind of, you know, watering this down. So it feels sort of less unique.
What a strange direction.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of good things about the game, but, you know, also, I just feel like it can't hold a candle to the previous Layton games from what I've experienced so far. And I'm probably about halfway through, I would say. Also, visually, it looks pretty good, but once again, there is no 3D involved.
Okay.
And I think the last two Layton games were in 3D, and it worked pretty darn well. And then to not have it in this game is kind of jarring, and I don't really see the reason that they would take that out. It is very weird.
Strange.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, as a big Professor Layton fan, I have to admit I am fairly let down by this game, but that doesn't really mean it's bad. It's just, I guess I had really high expectations.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep playing, but yeah, if you're someone who has not played Professor Layton game before, I would probably not advise starting with this one. You know, unless, you know, maybe you're a young girl, because it seems like a lot of the stuff in the game is sort of maybe aimed at that audience. Obviously, the main character is a fairly young woman, and then you can like get different outfits, and you can do a lot of, you know, decoration for her office. So it seems that, you know, in a lot of ways, the game is perhaps, you know, not necessarily aimed at me.
Okay.
I mean, I'm fine with that stuff being there, of course, and I hope there is an audience that appreciates it.
Sure.
Because I would very much like to see this series continue, even if I found this entry to be a bit of a step backwards in some ways. Another new release I would like to discuss is Golf Story. This one actually came out in the Switch eShop a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't have time to talk about it on the show due to the release of the Super NES Classic, as well as the fact that I have not yet picked it up myself. But CJ, now that you're here, I would love to hear your thoughts on this golfing RPG title.
Yes, so a lot of people have mentioned that it's sort of a spiritual successor, maybe, or at least it takes a lot of gameplay cues from the Game Boy Color version of Mario Golf.
Right, and that had a lot of RPG elements that they never, you know, brought back in most of the console installments. People are like, why don't they do that? Why do they give such a bare-bones game?
That's right.
So it's kind of cool to see an indie developer come out and make a game that has that sort of thing that people have been craving for all this time.
Yeah. Well, I never played that game, so this is all sort of new to me, but I do like video game golf quite a bit. I like the Hot Shots Golf series and Everybody's Golf on PlayStation, and I haven't played any of the previous Mario Golf games, so including the Game Boy Color game. So,
wow.
But this game...
How did you miss all those?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. This game is a fun little RPG. It's got pixel art, but it's sort of a combination of pixel art and hand-drawn stuff for some of the interface elements. And your main character wants to be the very best golfer in the world.
Okay.
That is his dream ever since he was a young child and his dad taught him how to play golf, which is the tutorial in the game.
Okay.
It sort of flashbacks to that. And you wake up and you decide you want to be the best golfer. And so you set out on this and everybody tells you that you're horrible, that you're the worst golfer that they've ever seen. Even if you're performing perfectly well and having great shots, they don't believe that you can possibly be this good. There's a lot of disbelief happening right
it's
in front of your
eyes.
It's
not very nice.
It's not very nice at all. But so far, I'm only about 3 or 4 hours into the game, probably.
Okay.
Maybe less than that. And allegedly, it's a 20-hour game or thereabouts. So, and it's been a really interesting mix of gameplay styles. So I'm familiar with the whole golf shot gauge that you have, and you press the button, press the A button 3 times, and you shoot.
Okay.
And it does that here. But it's all from a top-down perspective, so some things like getting the slope of the green are done slightly different because it's always an overhead view, so you have an arrow instead that you have to kind of pay attention to get that information. But there is a lot of golf. There's a lot of shooting into targets, a lot of target practice side quests with NPCs. One that I just did is in this sort of prehistoric world, and you have to first collect these turtles, and then...
So how did you get to a prehistoric world? Did you suck through time or something?
Well, it... Apparently, the overworld of the game is sort of a mock version of Australia.
Oh, yeah. The developer's Australian, right?
The developers, yes, are from Australia.
Okay.
And this sort of prehistoric land is adjacent to the area that you're in.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea. You're not sucked through a wormhole or anything like that. You're in present day.
All right.
But everybody who's there talks like cavemen, and it's really, really rather interesting and humorous. But you collect these turtles, and then the turtles go into the water, and since you helped the turtles get back into their natural habitat, they help you by basically tossing your golf ball if you happen to hit it right to where the turtles are lurking, and you have a sort of light blue circle in the water where you can aim for where a turtle will help you out. There are other things like fish in the water that have a similar thing. There are moles on the course that will, if you shoot at them, they'll do something else with your ball. They'll throw it in another direction.
So lots of interactive elements.
A lot of interactive elements, yeah. Even while you're just walking around the game, You can drop golf balls anywhere you want and take shots anywhere you want as well.
Okay.
And some of those shots will unlock new things, or the world itself is semi-interactive. You'll wander around and find little things to interact with. Yeah, it's certainly a unique game of golf, one that I did not expect whatsoever. Oh, and there's also a faction of players who like disc golf.
Hmm.
And they want to take over the course from the people who like ball golf.
Uh-huh.
And they hate being called frisbee golfers. They hate the word frisbee. Very
so disco
elitist.
Golfers instead.
disc golf, or they're very particular about the language that you use when you're talking with them.
Disco freaks.
It introduces a different mechanic for disc golf. You actually do get to play a little bit of that as well.
Huh, okay.
And there's definitely different mechanic for that, but it's pretty interesting, and the story is really great. The humor is pretty odd and interesting, and
yeah, it seems pretty quirky from what I've seen.
Very quirky, but it's a whole lot of fun, and it's only $14.99 on the eShop, and it is a Switch first game, and it really I happen to know somebody who bought a Switch specifically for Golf Story.
Wow.
And I, you know, if you've been missing the type of gameplay that was in that GBC Mario Golf, which I didn't play, but I heard was really good, then you might want to pick this up because it is quite fun.
Okay, cool. I have another question about it for you.
Sure.
Now, being a golf RPG, are there battles, like random battles where you get into a golfing contest with other people, or does that sort of thing not happen?
It hasn't quite happened like that.
I'm expecting you're walking through the field and that's like in Pokemon where you meet another golfer's eyes, like, okay, we gotta throw down with our golf clubs and see who can, you know, hit the ball to, you know, this target first or something like that.
So. There are no random battles, but the NPCs have like a little speech bubble above their head if they have something for you to interact with.
Okay.
Specifically. So in the desert area there's a little side quest where they'll challenge you to hit only on the green or the rough. Like, you have to basically take the rough all the way to the hole, or you'll have to only shoot into the sand and see if you can get to the hole only doing bunkers and the green. So it's a pretty unique challenge every time you come up to one of those NPCs and they challenge you to do something different.
Okay, so no random encounters,
no.
But lots of side quests, lots of optional stuff, lots of exploration, things to discover.
Exactly.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
Yeah, I don't buy too many golf games myself, but I do believe I will be picking this one up. So, glad to hear you're enjoying it.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move along from the game impressions and talk a little bit about some recent news. First of all, just a few days ago, we had the Nintendo World Championships 2017. So, big congratulations to the new champion, Thomas Gonda, who competed in games including Breath of the Wild, Super Smash Bros., Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, ARMS, Splatoon 2, and Super Mario Maker to be crowned the winner. CJ, did you watch this?
I did not watch the event, but I saw the updates on Twitter of what they were doing, and I think the most interesting part was the underground challenges where they did some lesser-known Nintendo games like the Bird and Bean game, Balloon Fight.
Yeah, the underground challenges were the ones who they sort of lost the main round, so this was a way to sort of get back into the game.
That's right.
This is what they called the underground challenges.
And Super Mario Brothers Deluxe was in there. Like, there were a lot of like really kind of obscure and neat
ones. That one was like the semifinals where Super Mario Deluxe came in.
Oh, okay.
And to be honest, I missed a lot of the early part of the competition, and I did come in when Thomas Gonda was fighting his opponent in Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, and he was playing as Luigi, and so that like automatically made me root for him, because it's like, okay, he's clearly the underdog here, he's being forced to play as Luigi, the other guy is Mario, let's see if this guy can pull it off, and he managed to do that, so that was nice.
Awesome.
But the finals were in Super Mario Odyssey, which pleased me because that's what I was totally hoping for. I'm like, man, I really hope that they take a page from the Wizard and, you know, have the new unreleased Mario game be the finals and show us part of this game we've never seen before. And that is exactly what they did. And in the end, it came down to Thomas and the previous champion, John Numbers, and they competed in three Super Mario Odyssey challenges. First, a 2D platforming stage. Then they had to climb a tall tower where they had to fling themselves using Cappy from pole to get to the top. And I couldn't believe how fast John Numbers did that. It was amazing. Like, how could you do that when you never played, you know, this part before? He just did it so fast, I was shocked. And then the final round was a boss stage against this big Buddha-like statue, and you had to capture the hands, then punch it in the face, and they were basically just seeing who could beat this boss the fastest, what it came down to. And it was a pretty thrilling finale, and it was really cool to see all that new stuff, too.
Awesome. Yeah, I think there was some speculation early in the day that there was going to be some big, like, new game announcement for the finals, right? But I was sort of with you where I was like, you know, it's going to be Mario Odyssey, right? It's going to be some part of that game that we've not seen just because that game comes out in a few weeks. And Nintendo obviously wants to keep people hyped for the stuff that's out this year rather than announcing something new at this point.
Yeah, I think it was the perfect thing to do. It was a great way to end it, and it was a pretty darn cool competition from what I saw.
Awesome. I was hoping that they would do some kind of highlight reel for YouTube, and maybe they still will, very possible, but they do have the near five-hour-long stream up on YouTube, and I sort of skimmed through that. But
yeah, it's a lot to take in.
It is, yeah.
Well, there's a good reason that I was not able to watch the entire thing, and that is because I was gallivanting all about... That's a good word, gallivanting, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Was gallivanting all about Southern California that day because I was trying to get my hands on some new Nintendo collectibles.
New collectibles?
Yes,
Are you talking about Amiibo or something else?
I am not talking about Amiibo. This is almost as good as Amiibo, though. In case you are not aware, there are officially licensed Nintendo Hallmark ornaments that are out and available this year. There is a great-looking Mario that came out, boy, I think it was actually released back in July. But then, this past weekend, on Saturday, the same day as the Nintendo Championships, they released two more ornaments. They released a Yoshi, and they also released a Luigi. And it turned out this Luigi was like a super limited release. Each store only got in a couple. And, you know, I thought that, you know, Nintendo fans were crazy when it came to lining up for new Amiibo and new systems. Well, Hallmark ornament fans, turns out they are just as crazy.
Oh, no.
And I didn't think I'd really have any trouble getting this. I thought I would walk out to the store late in the day or maybe, you know, saunter over there later on in the week and go pick this thing up. But I ended up going out to a Hallmark store, and I got there like 10 minutes after they opened, and they were already completely sold out of Luigi.
Oh my gosh.
And so then I checked a couple other stores, and they were completely sold out of Luigi. Eventually, I finally found one that, you know, required me to drive like an extra 30 miles. But I did go there, and I got my Luigi, I got my Yoshi, I got my Mario. And so I'm going to have a nice, festive Nintendo Christmas tree this year. So if you're looking to do that, you know, maybe you can still find a Luigi out there. I don't know if you're really lucky, but certainly Mario and Yoshi are out there. And these are pretty nice, pretty nifty, pretty well-made ornaments that I think I can get behind.
Nice. Do they make any noise or anything like that? Do they have any sound chips in them or anything?
Nope. They are, you know, pretty simple, regular, normal ornaments. They're only about $15 a pop. So, yeah, they just look cool and look great on your tree.
Cool.
And I hope it continues. Hopefully next year there'll be a Bowser or Princess Peach, or maybe they'll, you know, do some other properties. Maybe we'll get Zelda or Metroid ornaments or something like that. That'd be really cool.
That would be awesome. I know in previous years they, I picked these up actually. They did a Pac-Man machine and a Galaga machine, arcade machine.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, bring bring on more video game ornaments. I want to have an entire tree with just video game stuff
yeah,
on it. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I mean, there have been Nintendo ornaments before, but I think this is the first time there's actually been Hallmark ones. So,
and yeah. Hallmark makes great ornaments. I have quite a few of their stuff, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, lots of good stuff. Moving on to some new game announcements. We found out from the folks at Atui that they've got a new game for Switch in the works. That is Mutant Muds Collection. It is coming out sometime before the end of the year. CJ, are you particularly familiar with the Mutant Muds titles?
Not really. You know, I had heard that they were difficult platformers and I kind of stayed away, honestly.
Well, I guess it's fairly difficult in the later goings, especially if you want to get all the collectibles. The first Mutant Muds wasn't that bad. The sequel was Mutant Muds Super Challenge. So as you can tell from the title, it is fairly tough, and that actually kind of kept me away from that one, too. Hmm. So that's what's on this collection. The original Mutant Muds, Mutant Muds Super Challenge, and then a third game called Mud Blocks, which was originally released on handhelds as a game called Bomb Monkey, but it has now been reskinned with a Mutant Muds theme to be part of this collection.
Cool.
Yeah, these were some pretty darn great action platform games when they were released on 3DS and Wii U and other systems. And this will be a great opportunity for people to play them all over again or perhaps check them out if they never got a chance before.
There you go. I was hoping that Atui would do Chicken Wiggle for Switch.
That'd be nice, too. That's a fun game. That's a fun game. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, after it didn't perform so well on 3DS, Atui is probably in no rush to revisit that title again. But it is really darn fun, and it does deserve a broader audience.
Yeah, I did pick it up during that sale because
cool.
They put it on sale for, I think, like a month or at least a few weeks. And when I heard that
it was at least 2 weeks.
$5 off or so, I picked it up on 3DS.
Are you liking it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it.
Excellent.
I don't play too much on my 3DS anymore. When I do load that up, it's mostly Metroid. But Chicken Wiggle is a nice palate cleanser from that.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed it myself. Speaking of nifty indie games, though, the other recent announcement is a game called Night Terrors from the folks at Nicolas. This is coming out on Switch on October 24th, and it is a horror-themed auto-running action game in which you hack and slash and double jump and triple jump and quadruple jump your way through the enemies and over spikes. They just released a short trailer that was about a minute long. From what they've shown, it doesn't seem like the game is super deep, but Nicolas generally publishes really cool stuff, and if the price is right, it could be just the thing to add to your Switch library in time for Halloween.
Sounds cool. That and The Mummy Demastered.
Oh, that's right. They did. Too. They gave the official release date for that. It is also the 24th. So yeah, there is definitely going to be some cool horror-themed stuff coming out later this month. I'm looking forward to both of those.
Awesome.
All right, this seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that, and then come back and discuss this week's big topic, which is favorite video game ninjas. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is favorite video game ninjas. Now, perhaps you are thinking, why favorite video game ninjas? And to that I say, why the heck not?
Ninjas are awesome.
They are. Ninjas are awesome, and they've been part of the video game landscape, you know, pretty much since this hobby began. So, CJ, in your opinion, why do they make such great characters in video games? Why are ninjas so cool?
Because they're quiet, you never see them coming, and they have the best weapons. They got the nunchucks, they got the throwing stars, they got the katana blade, they got special spirit powers as well that you can normally call upon to defeat enemies. And they're just, they're everything that you're not as a young gamer anyway.
They are very, very versatile. That's one of the things I think that makes them great, because sometimes they're perfect for stealth and being sneaky, but a lot of times, especially in video games, they're just in your face and they charge you head on and they will just, you know, hack you apart, or hack the bad guys apart anyway.
That's right.
And yeah, sometimes they'll rely on magic instead of stealth or instead of weapons. So that's certainly one of the things that makes them cool. And the other thing, though, is that I think that they're just close enough to reality to be believable. It's a lot of stuff in video games that you're, you know, it's nothing like anything you're ever going to see. You're not going to see a plumber jumping on turtles, hopefully. But you've seen martial artists. You know what martial arts are. It's very believable. We all know what that stuff is. And, you know, ninjas, you know, maybe they didn't really exist like they're portrayed in the media, but they did exist in some form. And so because of that, because it is pretty close to reality, I think that's one of the reasons why people like the idea of ninjas so much, is that they could, maybe even do, really exist out there.
Totally.
I think that's where the appeal comes from. That's what makes them so good as inclusions in video games, as well as other forms of media, too.
Yeah, I think the first time I learned of ninjas was back in the 80s. There was this TV show, I think, called The Master, or... it was on MST3K as well, but I had watched it when I was a youngin', and it was about, you know, a ninja master teaching his ways to just a regular American guy, and it was super interesting. And of course, any comic book that you picked up back in the day had the little mail-in catalog where they had all sorts of ninja gear that you could get and act out your ninja fantasy in the backyard. By throwing stars at trees.
Yeah, that is a little dangerous, though, so it is probably safer and better to live out your ninja fantasies in video games.
Agreed.
So with that in mind, we are going to go down our list of some of our favorite video game ninjas that you can interact with on Nintendo systems. And I'm not going to say these are in any real particular order, but, you know, we'll see what we can do. So the first video game ninja I would like to call out is Joe Musashi, Master Ninja from the Shinobi series.
Ooh, nice.
Of course, that is a Sega character. He is mostly known for appearing on Sega systems, but a lot of his games have been on Nintendo platforms, like Revenge of Shinobi, which is one of my all-time favorite games, came out on Virtual Console. And of course, that is the ninja game where you get to fight basically Spider-Man and Batman and the Terminator and Godzilla. And what's better than that, really?
I know. What opponents could a ninja want more than those things?
I know, exactly. Mm. And then on top of Revenge of Shinobi, there was Shadow Dancer, there was Shinobi 3, and those were also quite good games. Revenge of Shinobi still remains my favorite, but the other ones are quite good.
I actually really liked the original Shinobi, the arcade game, and the Sega Master System game. I thought was really fun back in the day.
Yeah, I never played that one very much, even though it was part of Arcade Virtual Console on Wii.
Didn't it come out for the NES via Tengen?
It did, yes. There was an unlicensed version that came out on the NES. That is totally true. And I probably did play that back in the day, but I don't remember it particularly well.
Mm.
Yeah, for me, Revenge of Shinobi, Shadow Dancer, Shinobi 3 is where it's at. Shinobi 3, of course, had that great 3D version that you can play on the Nintendo 3DS. I would totally recommend checking that out. And then there was also that brand new 3D Shinobi game that was simply called Shinobi, released several years ago. That was not Joe Musashi. That was Jiro Musashi. And they had some sort of insane time-traveling plot involved. So, like, his father was born in, like, I don't know, the 14th century or something, and they time-traveled, came to the future, and maybe fathered a child there. It's all really weird, and it's really, I mean, that's a crazy game, too. I mean, it doesn't have the Terminator in it, but it has, like, you know, giant sharks from the prehistoric era and stuff like that. And I know that game really didn't get the attention it deserves, in my opinion, but it's a really fun action game, and it's full of ninja goodness, so I would certainly recommend checking that out if you have not played it before. And you can probably get it for you know, a pretty reasonable price, too.
Yeah, I would think.
All right. What's one of your favorite ninjas?
Well, after watching that show back in the 80s, one of my first exposures to video game ninjas was Ryu Hayabusa in Ninja Gaiden, which at the time we called Ninja Gaiden.
Yes.
We didn't know how to pronounce it. But and that was one of my favorite NES games. I got that for a birthday one year.
One of mine, too.
And even though it's super difficult and I've never actually finished the original Ninja Gaiden, I really enjoyed all of the mechanics on display in the game. And, of course, the amazing cinematics, which were, you know, some of the first to really be movie style, right?
Just a girl? Get out of here.
Exactly. Classic line. Classic line.
Yeah, I love that game. Ryu Hayabusa is definitely one of my favorites. And I love that series for, you know, all the things that that you said about it. Great cinema scenes, cool bosses, great variety of levels. And you got, you know, cool ninja attacks, your spin attack, your throwing fire, a couple of ninja stars. Yeah, that was a pretty darn cool game. And that was probably one of the first video game ninjas I was introduced to. So, yeah, he is certainly up there at the top of my list.
For sure.
A couple more of my favorite ninjas are the characters that were at one time known as Kid Ying and Dr. Yang, but are more commonly known as Goemon and Ibisumaru from Konami's Legend of the Mystical Ninja series. And I'll be honest, these are some of the most un-ninja-like ninjas that I've ever encountered. Ibisumaru is kind of a perv, and you know, what does he attack enemies with? Like some sort of weird party whistle or something. Goemon attacks with a pipe. They power up by grabbing cats. They also hang out with ninja cats and weird clockwork robots and just go on the goofiest, craziest adventures. It might not be super ninja-y, but it's really, really fun. And I love these games, especially the first one we got in America, just Legend of the Mystical Ninja on the Super NES. Especially fun to play in co-op. Just got some really cool platforming, really good action, and lots of really neat RPG elements.
It's too bad that Konami is no longer making video games in the traditional sense, because it would be awesome to see like a rebooted version of Mystical Ninja that was true to that sort of 8 and 16-bit style rather than the PS2 game that they did very late in that series' lifespan, which was, I think, a little more serious looking and more Zelda-ish, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was. And, you know, there were also games on the N64. One of those was you know, all 3D and a little Zelda-ish. The one they did after that was Goemon's Great Adventure, and it was more traditional 2D. There were a couple games that were released, I believe, on the Game Boy Advance that were more in the classic style and, you know, sort of a little bit of a soft reboot. And again, we did not get those games here. But yeah, it would be really nice if you know, someone were to pick up that IP from them and to revisit this, because it was a pretty darn cool series.
He was also in Konami Crazy Racers.
Yes, yes he was. And there were also a lot of games in the series, a whole bunch of them that were never released in the US. So you know, if there were just a way to get those on Virtual Console or something, I would totally eat those up. So I'll kind of take anything I can get at this point, but with Konami, I don't have a whole lot of expectations.
Yeah.
What do you have next?
Well, I'm going to go with a game that a lot of people love. Children in the 80s will remember, of course, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, speaking of Konami.
Yes, and I actually didn't play the NES game so much, but I did play a lot of TMNT on the Game Boy. Once I picked that one up.
Interesting one to bring up.
Yeah, the first TMNT game that was on the Game Boy was just a sort of very simple brawler platformer thing. And
yeah, follow the Foot Clan.
Yep, I remember it mostly because the characters were huge on the screen.
Well, for a Game Boy game, I suppose so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was actually one of the first games I got for the Game Boy. One of the ones that helped sell me on the idea of actually getting a Game Boy. Yeah, it's a fantastic game in my opinion. I mean, it's really simple by today's standards especially, but it was really fun. It looked great. It had really cool music. And I actually did play, you know, most of the other TMNT games that are on Nintendo systems. I love TMNT 2 and 3 on the NES. Just lots of great co-op arcade-style action. Of course, TMNT 2 was actually based on the arcade game, but had more good stuff thrown in there, extra levels and extra bosses and things of that nature. And then TMNT 4, as I probably mentioned a lot of times on this show, is one of my all-time favorite Super NES games. Got some great co-op. Again, had lots of cool aspects to it that were not in the arcade game. And of course, you know, you had four distinct characters, all with their different ninja weapons. You know, in a lot of ways, the Ninja Turtles are not especially ninja-y. You know, not a whole lot of stealth going on there, although apparently they, you know, they hide from the public a lot. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're just going out on the streets, crossing a bridge, going through the streets of New York or across a highway. They don't care who sees them, apparently.
But they always wear trench coats during that time, right? If you go by the cartoon canon from the late 80s.
Well, not in these NES games. You're just like walking down the boardwalk on the beach.
That's true. You know,
going all over the place, just fighting the Foot Clan all over the city.
And you got that great Mode 7 knocking opponents into the screen stuff.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. In Turtles 4. Yeah, that's one of the best uses of Mode 7 on the Super NES.
True.
So, yes, I definitely agree with you that the Ninja Turtles are some of the best video game ninjas out there. Let's continue our talk about Konami and move on to another one of my favorite ninjas, the Cyborg Ninja from Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes. This character, you know, he's not the main character or anything. That, of course, goes to Solid Snake, but he was a great supporting character, even though the game has been out, you know, many years. How old is it now? 15 years since it hit the GameCube? More?
Yeah,
I don't know.
About 15. Yeah, 15 or 16.
You know, I'm kind of hesitant to talk about spoilers because the story is so great in that game. But you end up fighting the Cyborg Ninja in hand-to-hand combat. And it's really great the way that plays out and learning the relationship between Snake and the Cyborg Ninja. And the Cyborg Ninja is just totally badass. I mean, it's in his name right there, Cyborg Ninja. If there's anything that's better and more cool than a regular ninja, it is a cyborg ninja, wouldn't you say?
That's right. It's two great things that go great together. Cyborg yes. Ninja, yes.
Yeah, he's got that spooky glowing red eye. He's got stealth camouflage. He is far and away one of the best ninjas in video games.
Mm.
Do you have anything else on your list?
Well, this is kind of a ninja, but kind of not. The ninjis from Super Mario Brothers 2, I wanted to mention them.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, they're in their name, they start with ninja, even
sure,
though
sure.
They're not very ninja-y. They jump around, and I guess they're covered in black, right? But
yeah, they kind of look like, I don't know, like little creepy ninja heads
yeah,
or
they
something.
Do. But they don't have any throwing stars or any nunchucks or anything like that.
Nope. They just crash into you.
Yeah, they were one of the more difficult enemies in SMB2 to figure out their pattern. Like, mm-hmm. Whenever one of those was around, I always sort of, I would tread lightly.
Yes.
Because you never know when they will strike.
Yeah, it was a little tricky to jump on them because they were always trying to jump on you. They could be a little bit of a pain.
Yep.
But yeah, they're definitely some cool ninja-inspired Mario-themed villains. But speaking of ninjas that aren't quite ninjas, another one I would want to give a shout-out to is Sheik and the Sheikah from the Legend of Zelda series. I mean, they are not exactly ninjas, but they're very, very ninja-like with all of their talents and being able to disappear out of nowhere. And apparently they have lots of martial arts prowess. And certainly they're good at being sneaky and stealthy.
That's for sure. And disguising their identities.
Yes. Mm. Yes, indeed. Although I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. What could you ever mean? One more I would definitely be remiss to not give a shout out to would be Kid Nicky Radical Ninja.
Right. Ninja school will help you.
Yes. Yes, it will. It will help you. We're not really sure how it'll help you, but it will help you.
Be more radical. That's what it'll help you be.
Yeah. Again, you know, that's right up there with the cyborg ninja. If anything better than a regular ninja, it is a radical ninja.
Mm.
Yeah, that is a fairly old NES game. It was released in the first couple of years of the system's life cycle, but it actually holds up pretty darn well, I would say.
Now, this is the one where you can, like, jump in places on the map and, like, random things will happen, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
That's true. I mean, it did have secrets. I mean, you know, it's sort of like Super Mario Brothers in a way where, you know, you could jump up and, oh, there's a hidden 1-Up Mushroom.
Hmm.
you can go down a pipe and get to a secret area. And this had similar secrets in that vein. You know, if you jump in just the right place, you duck in just the right place, it might take you to a little bonus area or an alternate level or something like that.
But I feel like there weren't as many tells as to where those things should be in this game.
It wasn't very precise
others.
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, maybe that's what separates a regular ninja from a radical ninja. If you can find out all of these secret hidden things, you have proved your radicalness.
Indeed. And I know your former coworker, Phil Theobald, and my co-host on Player One, you know, he loves Kid Nicky and, in fact, has like a license plate holder that was Ninja School Will Help You.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, he might not be the most ninja-like ninjas. He's just running around, you know, hacking up bad guys, without really a care in the world. But still, he's a pretty, he pretty much lives up to his name, I would say.
Totally Radical. Wait, that's a different game.
Totally Rad? Yeah, totally that's rad. Something a little different. Yeah. I guess the last ninja I would like to give a shout out to are the ninjas in Bad Dudes. In a way, they're kind of the worst video game ninjas. For one thing, they went and they kidnapped the president, which, you know, isn't really a nice thing to do. But also, they're going up against these bad dudes who really just kind of seem like your average street punks. And they can take out these ninjas in one hit. One hit. Just punch them in the face and the ninja goes down. I mean, what kind of a ninja is that?
Yeah, they don't seem to be living up to their badass reputation, for sure.
No. These ninjas, I don't think they went to ninja school. If they had gone to ninja school with Kid Nicky, then maybe they'd be able to put up more of a fight. But then again, Kid Nicky also does go down in one hit, now that I think about it. So maybe they did go to the same ninja school. I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah, they might be kind of pathetic ninjas, but they are certainly some very memorable ninjas. So cheers to these guys, even if they couldn't quite get the job done.
Nice.
So that was an awful lot of talk about ninjas. Tell me, out of all of these that we've discussed, which one is your favorite video game ninja?
It has got to be Ryu Hayabusa from the original Ninja Gaiden, because he's just such an awesome character. And those cinematics basically burned holes in my eyes, and that is my impression of ninja characters oddly stems from that game.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. There's a lot of great ninjas, but I would say Ryu Hayabusa is my favorite as well. And I really, got to give props to that original game. You know, 2 and 3 were good. The modern Ninja Gaiden games were okay. But I think it all goes back to Ryu Hayabusa and that original Ninja Gaiden. Still an absolute classic. So yeah, right there with you. Ryu Hayabusa, best ninja ever.
All right, ninja high five.
Pizza power. And I guess with that, it brings our big topic on ninjas to a close, which means we should probably be wrapping up this episode. But you know what? I think before we go, we do have time for one more thing.
Is it a dramatic reading?
That's right. It is a dramatic reading. And we are going to continue the tale of Captain Nintendo. Now, everything that you've heard so far about Captain Nintendo was the first half of the story that appeared in Nintendo Power Volume 3. And we will now be continuing with the second half of the story that ran in Nintendo Power Volume 4. Previously, Nintendo employee Brett Randles paused his Metroid game and was caught in an explosion that gave him special powers. The explosion also caused the Mother Brain and Ganon to come to life in Nintendo headquarters, and they subsequently knocked out Brett's friend Max. So with that in mind, now the saga continues. "Aw, man," exclaimed Brett. "Not Ganon. Not Ganon." Turning to Terra, he confided, "Terra, I don't know what to do. These are the baddest villains yet, and I'm just one guy." "Brett," replied Terra calmly, taking his hand, "I don't know too much about these new powers of yours, or even what's really going on here, but I do know this. You are the captain of your fate. You have great powers that are totally unique. Look at yourself in the mirror. You are already more than just one guy. You are Captain Nintendo." Brett Randall's turned to see his reflection in the tinted picture window of the reception area. He gazed at the inspiring figure in the glass, adorned with the costume he himself had designed. In that fleeting moment, he realized his awesome destiny. Tara was right. Brett Randall's was now Captain Nintendo, and now Captain Nintendo was needed. Turning from the glass, he stared bravely at the terrifying spectacle before him. As he took a step toward the perilously powerful monstrosities ahead, and without turning his gaze from them, Captain Nintendo remarked, "You know, this is turning into a really long day." Concentrating, Captain Nintendo raised his arm shoulder high and pointed his fingers at the terrifying beast in front of him. But before Brett could fire any kind of blast, Ganon disappeared.
Where did he go? I want to know.
Yeah, that was kind of a lot of buildup for Ganon to just disappear
on.
Yeah,
seriously.
But, you'll just have to wait and find out where Ganon disappeared to as we continue this exciting tale in an upcoming episode.
I can't wait.
I'm sure. All right, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPack. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you'd give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody, and CJ, thanks for joining me this week.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
For myself, Chris Johnston.
Keep playing it loud.
And another one of our favorite ninjas, Kaze.
Thank you for stopping by.
We will see you next time.